In my book, I have this thing called the ACT acronym. So we acknowledge how we're feeling. That's the A. Concentrate on your breathing. And then you really want to take action on the things that you can control.
Hello, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. On the show, I interview peak performing innovators in the creative, social impact, and earth conservation spaces who are working to change the world. This episode is brought to you by Brain FM, which combines the best of music and neuroscience to help you relax, focus, meditate, and even sleep. And if you're liking the show, I would love it if you'd buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/IsoldeT. See the show notes for details. And now, let's get on with the show. Hey there, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg, and I am super grateful that you've taken the time to join me on the show today. And I'm also super grateful and honored to have my guest this week. You need to check this lady out. She's phenomenal. Sally Shaver-Dubois is doing some amazing work. Let me tell you about her. She's an educator, entertainer, and professional speaker and author of the book, Keeping Your Head Above Water. And that's a little special thing for me, too, because I edited it, and that was really fun. As a wellness professional, Sally spent the last 30 plus years helping people of all ages to live a healthy, active lifestyle. As a professional speaker, personal trainer, health and physical educator, certified laughter leader, can't wait to find out more about that, and certified health coach, she's guided thousands of people to improve their work and their lives. Sally, thank you so much for being here. Welcome.
Thank you. So honored to be here with you today.
You're so wonderful. And I'm so... Honestly, this is so much fun because we've gotten to know a little bit about each other from working on the book together, but I don't know much about what you actually do as far as certified laughter coach. What a great job. I was wondering if you wouldn't mind, let's just jump on in. Tell me about what it is you do as a certified laughter coach and as a professional speaker. What do you speak on and what is a certified laughter coach?
Well, a certified laughter leader is, I went about 15 years ago, I went to a training from the World Laughter Tour. Now, perhaps you've heard about laughter yoga. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. It's a different kind of yoga, which involves deep breathing, and you use these simulated laughter exercises. This actually started back in the 1990s with a doctor by the name of Dr. Kataria, and it started in India. So he's from India, and he came up with this idea to help the brain and the body relax, but also to infuse laughter as part of health. All right. So most of us, we laugh at something funny. That's called stimulated laughter. When we laugh at a joke or we find something funny on a movie or on TV. But these are called simulated laughter exercises. So basically, you're faking a laugh or a smile. And the research has shown us that the brain and the body don't know the difference, whether you're faking a laugh or you're laughing at something you find really funny. So I got interested in this, I said about 15 years ago, because I am a health and physical education by my training and wellness. And it was very intriguing. The other thing about me is that I'm a professional clown and entertainer.
Awesome.
So it kind of combined the two interests of mine, helping people to laugh because we all like to laugh, and also with the wellness aspect of it. So I actually went to a 2-day training where we learned and we laughed for 2 days straight, basically. And we learned all about these health benefits, but the simulated laughter exercises. So, you know, you could really find these if you just go on YouTube, or I have some on my YouTube channel or on my website. If you just Google a laughter yoga exercises, you'll see people doing these. Now, there are laughter clubs all around the United States. And I'm guessing wherever your listeners are, there might be one, especially if they're in a large city, where they could go and join. Now, COVID has taken a little bit of that away, but I know they're still doing them online and on Zoom and different places. But I used to have a laughter club where people will come together and you go through these laughter exercises as a part of the 30 to a half an hour or 60 minutes of time that you're with the laughter club. And you just, it's amazing as to how you feel. You come in, you're tired, or maybe you're not feeling so happy. And when you leave, you really do feel different. So how I use these now is when I go out and speak, and I mostly speak on wellness topics and team building, creativity kinds of things, I will actually get the audience up and have them try these. They're really silly type of exercises. And most people, if they're able to play and they have a little fun inside of them, they really have a good time with these laughter exercises. So that's how I utilize them. I've also used them with kids in school because I've taught and with teachers, and I teach a lot of teachers with professional relicensure credits, and they really like them too. So that's kind of what the whole laughter yoga, laughter exercises are about.
That's fantastic. And so when you're doing this, and you said you're a professional speaker as well, when you're doing this and you're standing in front of an audience, and probably some of them, as you said, don't feel all that well and maybe a little crotchety, how do you handle that? How do you change your mindset when you are in front of an audience like that? And how do you help them change theirs?
Well, I usually always tell people when I'm speaking, take the best and leave the rest. And as you know, as most people who are listening know, there's always going to be people in your life who maybe don't look at the world in a positive way. So I just have to keep that in mind. So usually how I do this is if I have room, I will get people up, standing up. That's the first thing. And most people are pretty good sports about standing up. If we have room to go and get into a circle and actually do this with each other, then we have that connection with one another as well. I will say that it works better when the people know each other because they don't feel quite as embarrassed or self-conscious versus a group where everybody's a stranger. However, most will get up and give it a try. I have had people who get up and they walk out of the room because they're just not going to be comfortable. So it's okay. I just know that there are people out there who maybe don't have that ability to play. Now, you and I are creative people and we're entertainers, and we have that little play gene inside of us still. You know, I say that all of us have a little girl or a little boy still inside of us who can play, and we need to let them out to play. And I think some people, through socialization or they've had trauma in their life or whatever negative things, and their little girl or little boy has been stomped down so much that it's really difficult for them to maybe even just do a simple smile and a ha 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 ha. But if I can encourage them to try that, and I try to show them ahead of time, you know, if you give this a try, you really will feel better. But there are, every once in a while, I have people who just, it's just not their thing. And that's okay. They just sit back and watch, and that's all right too.
It's so interesting how in teaching some of this, you have to navigate so many different personalities, so many different points of view and, yes, and places. You know, people are in different places all the time. And yet we're living through a really challenging time right now, you know, with the pandemic and and everybody is stressed. Everybody, yes. You know, yes. And if you're not stressed, good on you. You might be the Dalai Lama, but most mm-hmm. of us, most of us are stressed at least a little bit. And, you know, you've mentioned that the laughter exercises, the laughter yoga can help transform you. What are some of the other ways that you, when you're doing some of these workshops, when you're doing some of this work with teachers and with other organizations and maybe even companies, what do you do to help them manage their stress?
Well, you mentioned that I'm an author of the new book that you helped me edit. And Isolde is a great editor if you need somebody.
Thanks for a little plug, Sally.
Yes, there you go.
I love it.
So, in the book, I have what's called the LEARN acronym. So that stands for five different things to help manage stress. So we mentioned laughter, that's the L. Then I have the E is for exercise. A is for attitude of gratitude and giving back. R is for relax, reflect, and recharge. And the N is for nutrition. So when I go out and speak or I work with a group of teachers, to help them with their kids in their classroom, these are some of the things that I talk about, not only to relieve stress, but to help boost creativity and learning or productivity in the workplace. All of these things combined really do help the stress hormones to go down. So we have in our bodies this one stress hormone in particular called cortisol. You mentioned that in the last 2 years, we've been going through huge stressors with the pandemic. So that cortisol level goes up in our bodies and our brains. And it actually takes about 6 hours or so for that to go back down. So if you have a stressed morning with a spouse or in traffic or whatever it is, and it's going to take 6 hours for that cortisol level to be decreased unless we do one of these interventions like laughing, exercise, relaxing, having a better positive attitude, which I also giving back, you know, that's a really good one because it actually, we get just as much out of something when we volunteer to help somebody else as the person who's receiving it. And then nutrition is so important. I always say food is our medicine, and that can also affect our bodies, our brains. People are eating way too much sugar and way too much processed food. So I talk about all five of those things in my book, but also when I go out and speak to adults.
And I love the acronym. I think it's great. I'm wondering, when you're doing that, you know, as you said, there might be people who are skeptical, like when you say, hey, let's laugh together. And I love that the body and brain don't know the difference between a simulated laugh and a response laugh, I guess. And can you give a couple of examples of what someone might do in one of these, or maybe even more than one of these five techniques to reduce stress? Like if I had a stressful morning because I will give an example. I had a stressful time because my upstairs neighbor's grandkids were left unsupervised, and they turned on the bath water, they flooded the bathtub, it overflowed, and of course the water came down into my apartment. And so there I am dealing with this flood and going, you know, it's stressful. And I admit I stayed stressed. My response to that kind of situation, as soon as the emergency is taken care of, is to drop into some yoga. That's what I do almost immediately, right? I do some deep breathing and I go into yoga. But not everybody can do yoga. Not everybody does do yoga. What are some of the things that someone might do in the aftermath of a stressed out moment in one of these LEARN principles?
Well, I think you just gave a really good example. That would be with the R, the relax and reflect and recharge. So it might not be yoga, but it might be just do some deep breathing, you know, get some oxygen up to the brain and just try to do what we call mindfulness. And being in the moment, yes, you had a stressful thing with the flood, but what can we do we feel ourselves getting stressed. And I'm the same way. Sometimes there's some stressful thing that happens. It might be that you just have to just take a couple of nice deep breaths or put on some quiet music and be quiet. That's a really a good one. Another one is the exercise is just take a quick walk. It might be go up and down the stairs in your building. It might be, now I live out in the country in the middle of Iowa, so I can go out on the country road. And that really helps me de-stress because I'm out in the fresh air and it's something quick that I can do. One thing that we have to be careful with is the nutrition part. Is a lot of people, especially in the last 2 years with the stress, we started stress eating, and a lot of people have gained the COVID-19 pounds or more, right?
Yeah,
so
sure.
If we're going to go to the refrigerator, we need to make sure we're picking something that's going to not be those high sugar, high salt, chip kinds of things, but something that will actually help us with our wellness. So a piece of fruit or something that's a little bit healthier instead of the Dorito bag. All right. because that a lot of people, including me, we all were stress eating.
Sure.
And that one we got to be careful about.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, for me, I've trained myself, hummus and celery sticks is my go-to snack, is when I'm like, oh, I'm a little peckish, I want to go eat something. Mm-hmm. But it is hard because it's, you have to get it out and you have to slice the celery, and, you know, so I love the notion of a piece of fruit as a thing, or, you know, go for a walk, get outside, or put on a song and take a dance. I call them dance breaks. I take a dance break. So that's one of those things where we can super easily sort of, well, it might not fully take care of your stress response, whatever you're stressed out about it. And it might not take care of the situation itself, but you might approach it differently. And that's something that I guess goes back to your attitude of gratitude. It's kind of hard, though, to be grateful when you're pissed, right? So what advice would you have for someone who's ticked off and wants to perhaps go, okay, what can I be grateful for in this situation? How can I transform how I'm feeling into something that's more positive? What advice would you give to someone like that?
Well, and I think we all get that way, or we're stressed in traffic. I will say there's a couple of things. One thing that I actually have done if I'm stressed or mad or I'm around somebody who's really negative is just go into the bathroom or go somewhere in a private moment for a second and just smile, look in the mirror and smile and maybe even go nice deep breath in. That has helped me. And I think also to put things in perspective. You know, if somebody does something wrong to you, our human nature is to immediately lash back. Well, maybe we just need to take a moment, a timeout, adult timeout, and take a deep breath and, okay, what can I do here to make this situation better? I'm upset, but lashing out is not going to help. A people of faith might just take a prayer break for a second. So however that looks for you is to just take a moment before you lash back out or you're upset about something. And again, I think the exercise, taking a walk, is an excellent, excellent idea, whether you're stressed or you're upset, because our brains will actually process information better when we're up and we're moving and we get our blood flowing. I don't know about you, but when I'm trying to be creative and come up with new ideas, I'm always a lot more creative if I go for a walk, and ideas and thoughts come to me much quicker than if I'm just sitting on the couch.
Absolutely. And in fact, I've written a bunch of books and I wrote them, most of them, while walking in the woods with my dog. I was just recording things voice to text. And that's how I wrote the books, because it is much more free flowing. And yet, you know, something you said kind of makes me go, huh, there's this notion of reaction versus response. Reaction is the very quick, immediate thing that happens. Response seems to be, the way I look at it is, the difference between reaction and response is the number of breaths you take between what happens and what you're going to do about it, right? So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So when we want to be responsive, it sounds to me like a pause, like being okay with not saying something or doing something right immediately is really important. And is the breath, is stepping into breath the best way? And if not, what would you say to someone who wants to sort of lengthen that time between the inciting incident and their immediate, I'm really ticked off reaction?
Yeah, that might be, go back to the mindfulness. You might not be able to sit down and actually close your eyes, but in my book, I have this thing called the ACT acronym. So we acknowledge how we're feeling. That's the A. Concentrate on your breathing. And then you really want to take action on the things that you can control. We found out here in the last couple of years, there are a lot of things we cannot control in this world.
For sure.
So that, I think that worry and upset about all this stuff, and that has caused a lot of problems. But what can we control in our small little world? We can control how we react to things. We can control things perhaps in our own family, but even then we can't control our children. But what can we control and what can we take action on immediately? So you asked about if there was an incident, if you just think of those three things, I think in the immediate is, yes, be quiet. And how can I take control of the person that just flipped me off in traffic? You know, we can just let it go. And you know that little song, Let It Go, Let It Go? A lot of times I have to sing that to myself.
And that's a great song to sing to yourself. Not an easy song to sing, but still. Yeah, absolutely. There, you know, and I love that you brought up songs and creativity in that way. In that song, this is about a character who realizes that she doesn't have to worry so much about what other people think of her, yes, and that she can just, yes, let go of all that stuff. And I love that creativity does that for us. It, you know, songs, poetry, books, even TV and movies, all of that gives us an opportunity to see the human experience from this heightened but still relevant perspective, right? So,
yes.
So when we're talking about creativity, when we're talking about what you are doing with creativity, I would love to know if you could tell me a little bit about how you do it in the work that you're doing. Like, you just brought up Let It Go, which I think is great. Let's sing a song. And for me, singing, of course, is, I'm a singer, so singing is wonderful and lovely, and I love doing it. And yet you're doing it with the people, you're doing creativity and creative work with the people you speak to and with the teachers you teach and even with the kids. How do you do that? How do you infuse creativity in order to help people manage their stress and manage their lives a bit better?
Well, depending on the audience that I'm working with, I think there's a lot of things that I do to try to use creativity. I think one of them is just having that attitude of fun. And when I teach teachers, for example, in the summers, I think they appreciate the fact that they're not just sitting there listening to like a Charlie Brown teacher, blah, 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 blah. I use a little bit of magic. I use my puppets. We do use a lot of songs and dancing. And even when I'm out teaching all adults, I might take something like the William Tell Overture, and I have them do a little pantomime orchestra while they're all together. If I'm trying to do some team building, I have a team building workshop that I do, and I have them all do things together with in a circle. We might do a little story together. So I use a variety of things, but like you, I'm a musician. So I use a lot of music, whether it's me singing something or I'm a percussionist. I might play something to get people up and moving, but I also use a lot of different songs to illustrate something or just to get people up and moving. Maybe it's just for a brain break or a brain wake, but it's let's get up and let's have fun together. I have a lot of little props and I bring those out, like a rubber chicken or different things that I might utilize just to spur a little bit of laughter. With children, they love puppets. So I use a lot of puppets in my programs with kids or when I'm teaching kids at school. And they respond, especially young children, they will respond to the puppets. And I love doing ventriloquism and using all these different puppet characters to help teach them concepts in creative ways.
That's so cool. So to me, when you're talking about this, you know, puppets and singing and music and all of that, your mindset, it seems to me, is to bring this information about wellness and stress management and health and fitness in fun ways, right? That seems to me like that's what your mindset is. When you're pitching something like this, when you're like, oh, I'm going to go to a school or a bunch of teachers on their summer break, how do you work with the administrations or the people who might book you for something like this to get them to understand that it's important?
Well, that can be a challenge, especially as we've become more and more testing focused. A lot of the creativity is being pushed away and children are losing the ability to play that natural thing. I think administrators are realizing that these things are important, but yes, it can be a hard sell. Fortunately, the classes that I teach to teachers in the summer, they sign up for them on their own. And I've kind of have a little reputation now and the word has spread that, Sally's classes are kind of fun. As far as with the kids, I think the important thing when I'm pitching something to a school is that there has to be an educational component to the program. Mm. So it can't just be, I think 20, 30 years ago, you had an entertainer come in and do a magic show. It was just the magic, but now it has to be around some kind of a theme, or in the libraries, they like it to be an educational kind of a theme, but it's still creative. So I guess hopefully that kind of answers your question.
It does. It's just, you know, what you're talking about to me is crucial, right? So I look at it and I'm like, of course it should be done. But this is one of those things where we need to look at, like you said, what is the, I guess, quote unquote, benefit or academic benefit or maybe brain benefit to participants, right? To the students, to the teachers you're teaching, whoever it is you're talking to. But it is helpful, right? Research has shown that learning while something is fun, learning happens better, right? So can you talk a little bit about that, about how brain-based learning ties in with the fun that you're doing and with the stress management work that you're doing with students and with teachers?
Yes. So I've actually done quite a bit of research and also mentioned it in my book a little bit about exercise and learning or movement and learning. And more and more, I think school administrators are starting to see that. There was a guy or is a guy by the name of Dr. John Rapey, who has written a couple of different books, but one that he wrote was called Spark. And it's been a while now since that book has been out. But he really has been an important player in the research as far as showing how movement can help in the classroom and in learning. And I think also, let's see. So yes, there's been a little bit of research. One of the things that came out in about 2009 or 2010, there was a study at the University of Illinois, they actually had some children participate in some academic things. And then also they did some movement. They did some brain scans to see what happens with the brain, whether you're just sitting there trying to take in the information, or then they scanned after they had like a 20-minute walk. And it's amazing to see the activity in the brain and what happens as you get up and you move. So I think that the brain-based learning or the action-based learning is really important. So what do I mean by that? Because some people might say, what does that mean? Whether you're with adults or with your kids, it means that you're trying to learn something or do an academic skill while you're up and moving. So for example, instead of kids just learning spelling the old boring way, where you might just recite the, I'm going to spell water, W-A-T-E-R, you might actually have the kids jump up and down on the different letters or turn around, or they do something with a song, W-A-T-E-R, that spells water. And we know that the brain responds to music and exercise, and it helps to put it in long-term memory. So that might be a quick example of how you would utilize it with a child. Now with adults, most people here have probably been to a speaker, or you've been in a church, or you've been somewhere where somebody was speaking and they were going on and on and on. And pretty soon all you're hearing is wah, 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 right? Like the Charlie Brown teacher.
Like the teacher, sure.
Yes, because your brain starts to kind of, with adults, it's about 17 to 20 minutes. Whoop, it kind of shuts off and we start wondering, oh, I wonder what's for lunch, or where am I going to go after this? Unless we do some kind of action or brain-based learning thing. So perhaps that's where somebody tells a joke. We laugh, see, or you get the people up and down and they do something. That's the exercise. Or you put something on a screen, so you're engaging people. Now with little kids, we go with their age. So if I'm working with a group of kindergartners, about every 5 or 6 minutes, I need to get them doing something else, or they're going to be completely off task. And that kind of times out with our high school kids about that 17 to 20 minutes.
It's interesting to me that you have to stay so on top of it in order for them to learn optimally. And yet schools don't really do that, right? So what do you think accounts for the disparity, the incongruity between what seems to work really well and what schools are doing in our school systems?
Well, I have to be careful how I say this, but I will say most schools are doing what they can. The unfortunate part is that we have a lot of people making decisions for schools who are not really in the classroom and really understanding what children need or what they should be doing or how they learn different things. So we had something many years ago called No Child Left Behind, which kind of started all of this in the early 2000s with all this testing. And I think the testing, the standardized testing has really, I hear it from teachers. They're not the ones that, they want to do the creativity and they know children need to be getting up and getting moving, but they also have, unfortunately, they have these requirements of things that they have to do. A 90-minute reading block. Hello, we can't do 90 minutes of reading with kindergartners. After what I just said, the 5 to 6 minutes, they need to be doing something else. So teachers, I think most are really trying to come up with ways to keep the children engaged. And they're really, they're in a hard spot. And it's been especially hard now with the pandemic, and so many schools have been virtually learning, which it's really hard to be engaging, as you know, if you're working with kids and they're looking at a computer screen. So it's challenging. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a real balance there of the teachers telling me, we know we need to be doing these things. Yet those kindergartners in my state, they're supposed to learn by the end of kindergarten, 100 sight words. That's what they're tasked to do. Well, when you and I were in kindergarten age, we were not doing, at least not here in the US, we were not doing sight words. We were playing and engaging and doing those social emotional kinds of things. So it really has been a challenge, I think, for educators to keep the creativity and the things that they know are best when we look at child development. So that's where I try to come in and help the teachers come up with some ways that they can still do that with the limitations that they do have.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You know, teachers are superheroes. If I were queen, honestly, teachers would be making millions of dollars and like professional football players would be making like 40 because no, seriously, because, you know, teachers are we're entrusting teachers to train, to educate, to help develop tomorrow's leaders, you know. So we're it's so important to me personally, and also as a professional, as someone who goes into schools also and works with the students and with the teachers, it's really important that we understand teachers are doing the best they can. And yet it's the school systems, maybe even the Department of Education, puts down, like you said, these very I will say questionable ways of doing things without necessarily being people who were in the trenches, who were teaching. So there's a disconnect there. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what you think might need to happen to minimize that disconnect so that the people who are making these decisions have a better understanding of A, how children learn, and B, how to help teachers do their jobs.
Well, from a teacher's perspective, and I still am out substitute teaching. I was out yesterday subbing. And it's a rough go. This year has been tough for educators. I think something that the politicians, the people at the powers that be that are making a lot of these decisions, I think one of the things that us educators would appreciate most is ask us. Ask the professional, ask the experts, what do you think is going to help education? And also get out into the schools and observe what's really going on. And I think that's where there's a disconnect, in my opinion, because they're making these decisions down at the state house or at the national level, and they're not really understanding what is it like to be a fourth grade teacher these days or a high school teacher, because maybe they haven't even set foot in a school since they were in high school, or they're just looking at it through a parent's perspective, which is a whole lot different than when you're the professional educator in the classroom. So I think it's also, I heard a gal one time at a professional speaking conference say, she was from the South, and she said, do a good job, and tell somebody. Now, I think our educators, we need to do better. We need to do a good job, but then we've got to be telling other people. That has become a little bit easier with social media, but we really need to be in touch with those legislators and our senators, not that we'll get a response, but just taking the time to write a quick email and letting them know what's really going on in the classroom and inviting them to your school. Whether they will listen or not, I don't know, but at least I think we have to make the effort. And really, I think if the media would catch on to some of the positive things that are going on in schools, and some have, but it it's really disheartening to me when I see a TV program or a movie and or a play or something, and they're really just dishing teachers. Like, they show teachers just look ridiculous. There's a new show on, I won't mention it, but it's on network now, and I watched it a couple of times, and they're just showing teachers just look stupid. I'm like, come on, have you really been in a school lately? Like, teachers aren't just sitting in the teacher's lounge, you know, shooting the breeze for 2 hours with their colleagues. No. So,
right.
I just think that that would help too, if the media would put a little more positive light on educators right now too.
Yeah. And, you know, I 100% agree. And it's so, one of the things they don't say, teachers will, you know, you give out your homework, and you have to remember, you're in the school often at 7:30 in the morning. You don't stop teaching until 3:00. You might have a planning period in there somewhere. But then after that, you have to grade all the homework, or you have to read all the papers. That's on your own time, right? That's more than the 8 hours or 9 hours you spend in the school. That's after that. And if you want to do any kind of special thing with your kids, that's even on top of that, right? So so teachers, as I said, teachers are my heroes. They are rock stars as far as I'm concerned, because it takes a very special kind of person to decide that that's what they're going to devote their life to, because you are actually devoting your life, because it's not just the 8 or 9 hours you spend at the school. There's so much more that goes into it. And so when we're talking about this, we're talking about teachers, we're talking about the work that you do. You wrote this book to me in part because, much as I think you want, you're not ever going to get to every school district and every teacher in the country or even in the world. So keeping your head above water seems to me like it was a beautiful extension of your message in a way that lets teachers learn, lets other people learn about some of these principles. Is that the case? Is that why you wrote it? And if not, what were the reasons for you writing Keeping Your Head Above Water?
Well, I think you're right. Educators will certainly relate to the book, and it wasn't just for educators, but yes, I felt like I was being called to a bigger, larger message. Instead of just being able to reach the students in my school or with the teachers I see in the summer, you know, then they can take it back to their school, these messages. The book allows me to reach more people. And with this message of being able to manage stress and live with more joy, I think that to me is the ultimate thing that I want to do. I mean, my little tagline is to live a healthy, active, and joy-filled life in a stress-filled world. And I think we can aspire to that. It's not easy, but when we can do those things, we will have more peace and we will have more satisfaction in our life. Even in the midst of a pandemic, we can come to terms with that. So I guess that's the reason that I wrote the book. I started it far before COVID, but then I had to revamp it all once COVID hit. So those messages I've had in my brain for many, many years, and I just decided, I think it's time to actually get the words down on paper and get the book done.
And I'm really glad you did. It was an honor for me to edit the book, and it was also just super fun to see the way you approach it, and it's effective. And that's what I love about it. And I would love it if you would tell someone who's listening where they can find the book, where they can find you on social, what your website is, because I know people learn differently, and all that stuff's going to be in the show notes. But if you wouldn't mind saying it so that we can have as many people as possible get the message and find new ways to keep their head above water, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. So you can find it on Amazon. If you want the, you know, the digital version, you can get that there, and or you can order it there. You can also find it on my website, which is just my name, Sally Shaver Dubois, and the last name is DUBOIS.com. So you can you can contact me there. And it's got a little sample of the book. If you want to just look at it real quick, you can do that. You can also find me on Facebook. You can find my business page is Do Life Well Now. And so my business name is Do Life Well. That's how you can find me. I think that you can find me on YouTube as well, Do Life Well. If you're interested in the clown part, I'm Silly Sally. I'm sillysallytheclown.com, or I have a I have a YouTube page, Silly Sally the Clown, and I have a lot of songs and activities on there for kids to do. So I think that's how they could find me.
Awesome. And maybe we'll get you to come back and talk, go a little bit deeper into the Silly Sally part of who you are, because it sounds like both are inside you, both the educator and health and fitness person, as well as Silly Sally the Clown, which I think is fabulous. As you know, I'm married to a clown. So
yes, you are.
So it's really fabulous for me to speak with you and to work with you. Sally, I'm really grateful that you took the time to chat with me and to talk about something that's so important. You know, if you want to be a creative person, if you want to live your life well, you really do need to take care of your brain and your body and your spirit. And your principles really do a lovely job of making that accessible, which is so wonderful because it's necessary.
Yes. And thank you, Azolda, for having me and for all your hard work on making this book a reality. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was absolutely my pleasure. Sally, I have one more question that I ask everybody who comes on the show, and it's a silly question, but I find that it can yield some profound results. And here's the question. If you had an airplane that could skywrite anything for the whole world to see, what would you say?
Well, I would say joy. That's my, let's back up. We'll say have or be well and spread joy. There we go. Be well, spread joy.
I love it. Be well, spread joy. That's fabulous. What a great way to end this episode. Once again, Sally, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it. And I can't wait to have you back again to talk about Silly Sally, too. That would be terrific.
All right. Thank you, Azolda.
My pleasure. This is Azolda Trachtenberg for the Innovative Mindset Podcast. This show is brought to you by Brain FM, my favorite little app that helps me create, meditate, sleep, you name it. If you would like to learn more about it, you can check out the show notes. If you want to buy me a cup of coffee because you're loving the show, I'd love it if you do that. buymeacoffee.com/IsoldaTea. Until next time, I, as always, remind you to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the podcast if you're new, and it would mean the world to me if you told a friend about it. Today's episode was produced by Azolda Trachtenberg and is copyright 2021. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope. Until next time, remember to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. Thank you.